If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, who is in this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about Khums, or some of the jurisprudential laws around it, based on fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, somebody asked this question. I bought a car several years ago, and at the present time, it might sell for a price several times more than what it is purchased for. As khums was not paid on the money spent to buy it,
And I am planning to buy, with its proceeds, a house to live in. Does khums apply to the entire amount once I receive it? Or does it apply only to the money that I paid to buy the car, while the balance, I mean, or that is the difference of the sale value over the original price of the car, while the balance is considered as part of the earnings of the year in which the car is sold, and as a result is subject to khums if the money is not spent on living expenses by the end of the khums year?
Yeah. If the car was a part of your ma'una or a part of your living expenses, and it was purchased spending the income of the same khums year for personal use, mm-hmm. there's no khums on its proceeds. So, but in case you bought the car spending the income of the same khums year to be used for work, as I did discuss this issue in one of the previous episodes. So you bought the car to use it for work, to make money with it. You should pay khums on it. And of course, khums should be paid on the current market value of the car. And it's not paid on the original price or on original value. The increase in the event that there is an increase in its value during the next years, of course, after the, for example, because in some countries there is a lot of inflation, the cars and property go up, they shoot up, and the prices go up because of the inflation. Now the inflation has to be subtracted from the money or from the proceeds, and then if there is anything that, you know, if the price goes up and then there is anything that you have benefited in the same year, of course, khums should be paid. Mm-hmm. Khums should be paid on the proceeds.
Mm-hmm. I see. Another person asked, Shashavit, I owned a very modest house, but for some reason, I decided to buy another house. Due to debts, I was forced to sell the car which I was using and borrow some money from the provincial bank and Ribafri bank or loan institution in our city to pay for the house. As the sale of the car occurred before the beginning of my khums year, and I spent the money obtained from its sale to pay off a part of my debts, does khums apply to the money obtained from the sale of the car?
Mm. That is a good question. Well, if you bought the car using the income you earned during the same khums year, but sold it after the end of the khums year, you are not to pay khums on the proceeds. Now, this is the short answer.
After or before the khums year?
Because it doesn't make any difference. If you, for example, buy a car with the income you earned in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before the end of the khums year,
there is no khums.
There is no khums.
Yes, but
and
what about after?
After the khums, because there is no khums, because you bought it with the income and you used that car. That's the point.
I see.
You used that car and you earned the money with...
It's part of your life or living expenses,
you mean?
Yeah,
it's part of your expenses. And that's why khums is not paid on that money.
But what about the house, the second house that he bought?
The question was about the second house or about the money that comes from the proceeds of the sale?
The proceeds, but I'm just asking out of my curiosity.
Yeah.
Because he has two houses now.
Okay.
So one of the houses is applicable to khums, isn't it?
Of course, because if he is a small family with two or three, let's say, people in that family, and there is another house he has, probably he has bought it for investment or for any other purposes, no matter, because he needs only one house, so khums should be paid on that, on the second house, if he had never paid khums on the asset or on the money which he used to buy that house.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Because there's also a scenario probably.
Yes.
If he bought that house with the money he borrowed from the bank, okay? As you mentioned in your question, he bought it, he got some loan from the riba-free
yes.
bank, and then he bought the house. Now, the house, he has to wait and see if he pays off the installments, and then the house comes under his control, because as long as you do not pay the installments, mm-hmm. the house probably will be...
the property of the bank.
Yeah, it belongs to the bank.
Yes.
So once you pay the installments, the house comes to your possession. It's transferred to you. And now the house is there. You have not paid khums on the principal amount and nor on the house. So in this case, of course, you have to pay khums.
Does it make a difference if you borrow some loans or money from a riba-free bank or any kind of bank in the West?
Well,
which we do not know whether it's usury based or not.
Of course, it's usury based.
Yes.
But because of emergency situation or because there is an urgent need without which we cannot, for example, solve our mm-hmm. problem.
Yes.
There's a need, a very strong need to take a loan or receive a loan from the bank. And because of this very reason, there's no objection to you to receive that loan, even if you know that you will end up paying the not only the cap, the principal amount, but also the interest,
mm-hmm.
Since you are compelled to do so, there is no objection to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about khums, or some of the jurisprudential laws about khums based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, with Sheikh Javid. Well, Sheikh Javid, when a house or a car or any other necessities of the life that a person or a family needs and were purchased, these items were purchased from the annual income, are sold on account of necessity or to replace them with items of superior quality. What's the ruling in this regard? I mean, regarding homes.
Yeah, of course, this is something that always happens to us in our lives. Because there are things that are, let's say, outdated. There are, for example, items that are obsolete. You don't need them. You cannot use them because they malfunction. Sometimes they are very dangerous, like, for example, a broken car you are still trying to use or fix. So you want to replace them with a new one. There is no problem. The proceeds from the sale of these things, the sale of these items, which you have been using, obviously, are not subject to khums.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. How about some kind of, order or slips that some people get from some institutions for future investment? Like, for example, they're given this promise of a piece of land somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. By paying a special amount or a certain, like, limited, sum of money, then they're promised that piece of land later. And then later they can, for example, pay installments, not because of the fact that they have bought a house and are using it, but because they are going to use it later, or they are going to own that piece of land or that apartment later, for example, by a governmental institution or even a kind of private sector.
I think we talked about this in one of the questions you raised about house purchased, for example, on some kind of lease, I suppose. Yeah. And the money that is paid in and at once. It's one of the ways through which one has to buy a house or take possession of a house, unless you pay some money in or deposit some money with a company or with a bank, you will not be able to own a house. Mm-hmm. So in that case, there's no homes paid on that money that goes towards that's paid in an advancement. Okay. An advance. Yes.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, signing off. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الظاهر والباطن